This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer from Microsoft's Federal Sales. Susie, how are you today?
I'm great.
Kind of a repeat visit we had here a few years back, but there's so much has changed in Microsoft. It's almost like a whole different company, isn't it?
it actually absolutely is.
It's gone inside out and upside down, backwards and forwards, and now you pick up news publications and you see Microsoft is trending with teenagers. What is this? This is crazy talk, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's pretty interesting. Over the holidays, I had the opportunity to spend some time with my nieces and nephews, and I had my Surface with me, and it's a Surface RT, which is based on the ARM processor. And I had it up on my sister's kitchen counter, and I walked away. I think we went for a walk, and we came back, and all my niece and nephew in fifth and sixth grader did was ask me, you know, hey, Aunt Sue, how do you get into this thing? And
I
said,
fight for it, huh?
Well, you know, what was funny is people say that Windows 8 sometimes is difficult to get to use. Well, I really didn't tell them anything about, but here's the picture password, yeah. Circle these things, have at it. I came back, they downloaded apps, they've got things running, they're playing games.
It's like leaving cookies on the table, coming back, and the cookies are gone, or
yeah, it was
huh?
completely yeah. natural for them.
So. Why don't you give us a little bit about your background so our listeners know where you come from?
Sure. I was born in upstate New York, migrated here to the Washington, D.C. area around my fourth grade, went to George Mason University. My dad was actually a longtime employee of IBM, Federal Systems Division. I started out my career working, supporting the federal government as a consultant and a developer, working a lot with the Navy. And the Department of Defense, then kind of had a stint in the commercial space for several years in state and local, and then came to Microsoft about 15 years ago, where I started my position here in the federal sales technical role, then left for a couple years and opened up our technology center out in Reston, Virginia, and then came back as the CTO of Civilian and now the CTO of the federal sales team.
Well, that's it's a lot of hats.
A lot of different hats,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, a lot of different hats to wear. Well, we start off talking about Windows 8. Let's talk about Windows 8 and Microsoft. You know, people hear about it and they see it at stores, and there's three or four different flavors. And maybe you could give us a thumbnail sketch of what Windows 8 is all about and why Microsoft's moving to it, please.
Sure. So, you know, I think it's, when we talk about Windows 8, I think it's important to kind of to look at how Microsoft went about trying to design Windows 8. And if you take a step back and say, you know, where was Microsoft going to go, right, when you look at how people used computing technologies today in kind of this new world of work. And what we did is we said, you know, what we really want to be able to do is give users a single device that they can use regardless of what they're doing, whether they're completing a large project for work, whether they're creating and constructing a large Word document or using Excel, whether they're playing a game or reading a book, right, or watching a movie. Right. We wanted to provide a single operating system that can do both and kind of give people the best of both worlds, regardless of whether they want to use a keyboard and a mouse or they want to touch the screen with all the new touch technology that's out there today and the really innovative devices that are coming out. And so what we did is we took a look at Windows 7 and we said what we need to really do here is add touch. Right, and implement touch in a way that it can be used in the Windows 7, you know, standard desktop. But we also really need to add kind of a consumption model on top of this. And so what we did is we took, you know, the start button, which most everybody knows where it is, whether you're using, you know, Vista or Windows 7, it's down in, you know, in that left-hand corner. we took that concept of a start button and we created what we called a start screen. And so now when you look at this and what we call the modern UI, it's really a start screen that's very touch enabled with apps that you can now download from an app store, right? This particular user interface is now very tied to the cloud, whether you're using Microsoft SkyDrive or you're going to get videos or play Xbox, it's tied to Xbox. And it's a very intuitive design that we've really kind of implemented across not only our gaming technologies with Xbox, but also in our phone.
And I think many listeners know there's an operating system out there called XP. It's been around since many listeners were in grade school. It's been around since early 2000. And there has to be a change. There has to be a movement. And with Windows 8 is saying, look, this is a little bit better than the previous operating system. I think there's like 40% of users are still using the XP. So the stop support in 2014 for XP, is that right?
We do stop support in 2014. And if you think about it, we first released it December 31st, 2001.
13 years.
That's actually older than my nieces and nephews that I was talking about earlier.
An operating system still around for 13 years. I mean, that's phenomenal.
It is. And, you know, I think if you think about it, just purely from a security perspective, right, the technology that was in that operating system, right, whether we have patched it, obviously, and updated it over the years, it's just not fundamentally as secure as the innovations that are coming out today. And so from an upgrade perspective, what we're hoping is that this will be a fairly easy transition for most as they migrate, whether they're going from XP to Windows 7 or from XP to Windows 8 or Windows 7 to Windows 8, a fairly easy transition. They'll see some real benefit from an enterprise perspective and a mobility perspective.
And, you know, if you think about it, there were software developers in 1999 and 2000 that were working on XP. The world's gone upside down since then and changed around. So I think Microsoft at least owes it to their customers to respond to that change.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, if you look at just the federal government and some of the benefits they can realize from moving to Windows 8, I think I would classify really in two different categories. The first is mobility and the second is security. And I'd like to talk about the second first. From a security perspective, you know, you've probably heard many times that Windows 7 is the most secure operating system out there. And people ask them, well, you know, if it was the most secure, what in the world did you do to Windows 8 to make it more secure? And I think there's really four different things. And if you think about some of the challenges from a security perspective, one of them is, you know, you don't want a bad actor or malicious software to be able to take control of your computer, right, when it boots up. And so we've added something called Trusted Boot. And it basically eliminates the ability for malware to kind of hijack that boot process when you're booting up. It's also called Secure Boot, so that your computer just really can't become a bot. You know, and one of those, and we hear this, hear about these all the time, where some particular piece of malware is taking over all these computers to do bad things. The second thing we did is from that Trusted Boot is we now have something that starts right after that called a Measured Boot. And what it does is it really looks at the software as it's booting up, to measure kind of the health of the computer. And if it finds something out of sorts with the software, it's going to prompt you immediately.
Well, what's changed since the last time it booted and just doesn't make sense?
Right, so that you know if there's, you know, maybe you downloaded something, you know, previously and it didn't catch it, or the virus, you know, software didn't catch it, it will notify you right away. And then the third thing we added was Windows Defender. So we have our anti-malware just in the operating system itself.
It's baked in.
It's just baked in. And we also early load this anti-malware. So it's the third thing, and it's the first third-party software that actually gets loaded, right, in that process. And so when you start up now, it literally is right there so that nothing else can get loaded before it. And so we update this through just the malware signatures through the standard Windows update process. And then finally, the fourth thing I would say that I think is pretty revolutionary is if you think about, you know, you would go to a web browser and you try to download something, and most all the major browsers, i.e. Chrome, Firefox, would prompt you and say, hey, you know, are you sure you want to really download this file? And it would tell you, no, I don't really trust this file. Make sure you know you're downloading it. We've taken that technology, that kind of smart screen filter technology, and we baked it into the operating system. So now, regardless of what browser you're using, whether it's Internet Explorer, whether it's Chrome or Firefox, it just is there out of the box. So when you download a file, it's going to prompt you. A screen's going to come up and saying, hey, guess what? You're installing something. Make sure you really, really want to install this. And then, you know, a couple other things. We've obviously have a new password types with the cool picture password or pins. We have the ability to have for corporate and for government agencies direct access, which I think is just awesome. So now, instead of having to do the old school VPN into your network, You can now literally just have access, always on access, which is good for the end users, but it's also good for the IT departments, because the IT departments now have the ability to kind of be big brother all the time, whether you're at home, whether you're, because you're just always kind of on that network.
So there's four flavors: Windows 8, Windows 8 Pro, Windows 8 Enterprise, and then RT. I imagine that the home user may not really have to worry about some applications in the enterprise, and so that's where there's different variations within the systems. Is that right?
Absolutely. So on the enterprise version, we have things like BitLocker, which allows you to do drive encryption, and a number of other different technologies that are just come out of the box with the enterprise version. With the RT version, is not an x86 version, so it is a new version that's based on the ARM chip, processing chip, which gives you a great extended battery life. And those are the Surface devices that are out today, are the Windows RT Surface devices. In the very, very near future, the Surface Pro will come out based on Windows 8 Pro, and that will be based on the x86 operating system. That will also allow you on the Surface devices to download and run basically any Windows 7 app that you wanted. So you'll kind of have the best of both worlds. You'll have this really cool device that has much better battery life than a traditional PC, but also can run your Windows 7.
You know, Susie, we haven't even said the word mobile or phones yet, and there's a whole world of it. Maybe we'll take a break here to come back and talk about so many other topics. There's 8 hours of topics here with Microsoft. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Susie Adams. She's a Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft's Federal Sales. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft's Federal Sales. We talked about 4,000 topics in the first block. Now we're going to go to the next 4,000 on the list. And actually, in the first segment, we mentioned Windows 8, and I just talked about mobile and phones. And let's try to squeeze in maybe 30 seconds of information about the mobile's initiative that Microsoft has.
Sure, absolutely, John. Well, so we can look at it a couple different ways. Most people think about mobile, they think about phones. But in reality, the mobility really spans basically the way we work on a regular basis now, whether you're working from home or you're teleworking from another location or just happen to be on travel. And so what we've done in Windows 8 is really kind of take mobility, the mobility capabilities, to the next level. So we've baked in 3G and 4G support. We've added some administration tools for the end users so they know and they can quickly, easily connect to whether it's a hotspot or whether you're using a mobile connection. We've also given users the ability to do something called Windows to Go. So Windows to Go, think of taking the Windows 8 operating system and putting it on a USB stick, then taking that USB stick, complete with all your applications and all your data, and being able to put that into any machine, PC, that can run Windows 8 or Windows 7 today. You can literally, you boot up off of it. Excuse me. You boot up off of it. And then from there, what you can do is literally work like you're working at your desk, shut it down, take the stick with you, and go right back to work, complete with all your data. If you look at what's left behind, nothing's left behind. There's no footprint whatsoever that you've ever been on that machine. None of your data sits on that drive. It's all done in a sandbox.
Well, that's incredible. I was at a security event last month in Baltimore, and I talked to my old buddy, Alan Paler, and I see an article just yesterday in Network World, and he says that ensure your systems are configured correctly. He talks about security. Paler recommends that companies use a tool such as Microsoft System Center Configuration Manager. Measurement is the way to get things done. I mean, I would imagine a lot of agencies have to be concerned with security, and Microsoft comes back to Microsoft for security and have a great reputation, especially from Paler.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, if you look at our System Center tool, you know, our goal really here, and we, I think we have a fairly unique position as we kind of move into this world in the fifth generation of computing with cloud, where we come from this, you know, we have package software, we have desktop operating systems, server operating systems, and we need to kind of manage these, whether they're physical assets or virtual assets. And now we have to measure and include the cloud in there. And so what we're really doing is looking at this from more of a cloud OS or operating system perspective, and we want to be able to deliver a single pane of glass to help you manage mobile devices, your desktop devices, iOS, Android, right, cloud apps, virtualized apps, VMware images, right, all in kind of this single pane of glass. And that's really what System Center allows us to do, to make sure they're up to date and that you know exactly what's happening in your environment.
A pane of glass for Windows. I think I get it. Not that hard for me to figure out. Have had a lot of wins here with the EPA, the FAA, VA, with a cloud and Office 365. You want to talk a little bit about that and why they went with Microsoft Office?
Absolutely. And we have, and it's really exciting for us. We have over 300,000 seats right now of federal customers that are using or are going to be using and have purchased Office 365 in two different flavors. We have our government community cloud version, which is really federal, state, local, and tribal in a single physical community, logically separated. And then we have our dedicated ITAR, which is, think of it as a dedicated solution for a single agency. USDA, for example, and FAA are using our DI-ITAR today. We have a number of these, like Red Cross, for example, that's already up in production, as well as USDA, Recovery Board, Broadcast Board of Governors. And then we have folks like NIST, FAA, EPA, that are all in VA, that are all kind of in the process of migrating right now and making tremendous progress. And I really think the huge opportunity here for the agencies is really around helping them meet kind of their mobility demands, digital government strategy, data center consolidation, by being able to offer some of the new innovations in Office 2013 and SharePoint Enterprise 2013, allowing them to literally work on the device of their choice, whether it's a Windows phone, an iOS, or an Apple phone, an Android device, right? Doesn't really matter, because now we offer browser-based versions, for example, of Word, PowerPoint, and Excel that work in all the major browsers. All right, you can literally have online and offline access, and we're even introducing Office apps for Android and iOS, native apps, so you can work offline.
You know, I think that's the takeaway, the message from today is that, you know, I can remember years ago, and you can, you'd have a desktop computer, you'd load 23 floppy diskettes to get Microsoft Office in it, and people thought Microsoft was a box on the shelf. Well, it's not a box on the shelf, it's somewhere in the cloud now. It's I think people just have to make that transition and deprogram themselves from pigeonholing Microsoft. I mean, when you think about SharePoint and apps, you go, no, wait a minute, this is not a box of software on the shelf. This is very dynamic and responding to the way people want to work today, isn't it?
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, that you brought up a really good point with how you install software. And I think people, that's going to be one of the biggest cultural shifts for folks. So in Office now, we have this concept of click to run. So you no longer have to insert, for example, a CD into your machine. You can literally get your Office update streamed from the cloud directly down to you. And so that's a huge shift. Think of it as very similar to the app stores, right, that are out there today. And so now you'll instantaneously have the new updates just on demand. And when we look at some of the new advancements in SharePoint 2013, we've really taken a radical update from where we were before. Most people think of SharePoint as a content management kind of platform. They don't really think of it as a publishing platform or internet-facing websites. And we absolutely had capabilities in that space, but this particular release really changes the game from a mobility perspective, being able to deliver a form, you know, being able to quickly and easily build applications that fit the different form factors, so there's not a one-size-shoe-fits-all. From a social perspective, with our acquisition of Yammer, right, which is super exciting for us. From an e-discovery, being able to search across, whether it's an Exchange mailbox, a SharePoint document store, whether they're link instant messages, right? And then obviously, just from a cloud perspective, right? And being able to give people access to this particular service, whether you want to install it on-premise, right, with a box piece of software, or whether you want to leverage this particular capability in our Office 365 cloud.
I was reading a review of SharePoint 2013, and they said three words, apps, apps, apps. And it was like, now, you'd never think of SharePoint. I tell you, maybe I'm stuck into thinking of it as content management, but now it's almost a vehicle to incorporate apps in the way you do your job. It's a transition from the traditional thoughts about Microsoft.
It definitely is. I mean, we used to have something called SharePoint Web Parts. Yep. Now what we've done is we've upgraded that to something we call our cloud app model. You can build these cloud apps and actually publish them either to the Microsoft Public Store or to an agency private application store. You can write them in .NET. You can write them in JavaScript. You can write them in HTML5. Right? And what we've done really is create a three-tier environment now, so you can really separate the back-end business processing from the way you want to deliver it from a mobility perspective to the end users, so they can work the way they want to, whether they're online or offline.
I noticed the purchase of Yammer. Tell me more about Yammer and where it fits in your whole corporate perspective.
Sure. So, you know, I talked just a second ago about, you know, SharePoint wasn't really particularly social, didn't really have a lot of social media capabilities. It had some, but it was really more like putting a round peg in a square hole. And what we did with the acquisition of Yammer was really kind of up the game in the enterprise social software arena. And so you'll start to see, you know, in SharePoint 2013, you kind of see a little bit more there from a social perspective. But as we start to integrate Yammer, right, into here, you're going to be able to see the social, like the Facebook-like qualities that you can have, but now on a social, or I'm sorry, on an enterprise perspective, so that you can kind of protect those enterprise users and start to build those communities inside of an agency, or perhaps inside the entire federal government, without having to expose that to the world, right?
And kind of circles back to the magic word here, security. I mean, now you can do it in a secure environment, which I think a lot of managers are saying, no. Now they can look at it and go, well, why not? It is secure, finally.
Well, yeah, and I mean, if you look at Facebook, I mean, one of the things people, you know, I go around and talk about internet safety with high school kids all the time, and the first thing I warn them about is be careful what you post on Facebook and what pictures you're taking with your phone, because eventually you're going to go to college and you're going to try to get a job, and this stuff can really be taken out of context. And so this gives, you know, people the ability to kind of have a little bit more freedom inside their work environment and not expose it to the outside world. And the internal collaboration capabilities, really, it can be a huge benefit.
Susie, let's take a break. When you come back, we'll talk more about a recent big win from Microsoft over the Department of Defense, and then talk more about the new technologies and transition that Microsoft is making in the world of cloud. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Susie Adams. She's the Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft Federal Sales. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft's Federal Sales. Been talking about all kinds of topics. The last segment we talked about SharePoint. You know, a lot of people who listen to the show want to get their information through blogs. I have a blog. You can go to Google and type in John Gilroy blog and mine pops up. Are there blogs that you read or something maybe my listeners might want to keep? I know Lewis Shepard's a very popular blog called Shepherd's Pies. Is there anything else you might want to suggest for my listeners?
Right now I don't keep my own blog. I did once upon a time, but I do. I am a regular contributor to a Microsoft blog that's called Future Fed, and you can find it on Microsoft.com/government.
Oh, great. Future Fed. Yeah. And the person we mentioned was Lewis, L-E-W-I-S, Shepherd. He has an interesting blog called Shepherd's Pie. And he talks about everything, actually. I mean, and you can talk about traveling in Europe and go there and talk about security and new technology and the cloud and Microsoft. So he's a kind of an interesting carry, kind of a man of many hats. He's a Renaissance man, to be sure. People who are listening know there's a big win for Microsoft. You were jumping up and down the chair, screaming about it earlier, talking about, well, you know, they had a big win from Department of Defense, and Microsoft has a very large contract. And I think one of the reasons is we touched on security and comfort level and flexibility, and that's what the DoD is all about. And why don't you talk about more, and you can brag as much as you want.
Well, you know, as much as it is a win for Microsoft, I think it's also a huge win for the Army, the Air Force, and DISA, because really what it allows these folks to do is to more cost-effectively modernize their technology infrastructures and really empower their personnel with the latest productivity and collaboration tools. And they can do it in an extremely cost-effective manner by kind of combining, right, their purchasing power. And so what this is really it's a three-year joint, what we call a joint enterprise license agreement. It consolidates existing licensing agreements that are already out there that the Army, the Air Force, and DISA had into a single agreement. And it allows them kind of to standardize the desktop. So it's really Windows 8, Office 2013, and SharePoint Enterprise, yeah, 2013, allowing them to do things that they really couldn't do before from a collaboration perspective and an integration perspective across those different branches of the military. And so we're really excited because I think that now that they have this standardized platform, we'll be able to help them kind of deliver additional innovation. Things like, for example, the web apps capability. I talked a little bit about it in the cloud. We also deliver that capability for browser-based versions of Word, PowerPoint, and Excel behind the firewall. So now they own this technology. They can go and install it in their private clouds that are hosted in their data centers, right, on military networks, and allow those users on those military networks to work in the device of their choice, in browsers on those networks.
And I think that that's the key, is that it gives them the flexibility that people are forcing them to have in an environment that they can feel comfortable in, and not have to worry about bad things happening. In fact, if you detach yourself from the DOD and you look at the commercial world and you pick up a publication like Network World, they will review Windows Server 2012 and they'll say, you know, this is a server that can't be ignored. And it really can't, because it gives, again, Microsoft and flexibility, it's the term that I'd never associate with Microsoft for 20 years, but all kinds of dynamic configurations and virtual images and mobile and security. And that's what the center point is Server 2012, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And so, you know, if you look, just recently we announced this concept of a cloud OS, and I got a lot of questions about this recently. What is your cloud OS? I thought, you know, your cloud was really Office 365 and Windows Azure and the products you announced some time ago. And really what we're trying to do is, I think, extremely unique in this space right now. And what we really want to do is deliver, you know, our vision is really deliver one platform that spans three different types of traditional hosting. So whether it's a private cloud hosted, for example, in an agency data center, where it's a cloud that might be hosted at a systems integrator or a hosting provider, or a cloud that's hosted in the Microsoft data centers, we want to take the innovation that we're doing in our cloud and backfeed that into our packaged software products. And so that's really what you're seeing with Windows Server 2012 and our System Center line of products. In fact, with System Center 2012 Service Pack 1, we just announced yesterday that we're adding a ton of new features to really kind of advance this cloud OS capability, allowing you to manage kind of the way people work today on these any devices, anytime, anywhere, using a variety of virtual technologies, whether you're virtualizing your desktops or whether you're virtualizing servers, or whether you're using Microsoft's hypervisor, which has been significantly upgraded in the 2012 Windows Server product. It just comes with the product, because we feel that, you know, as we move into this world of the cloud, virtualization is key, whether it's a virtual network or a virtual server or a virtual desktop. That is kind of the way of the future. So we're just kind of baking it into our product, whether it's Windows, the Windows 8 desktop or Windows Server.
You know, well, we started off this interview talking a silly topic about, you know, Christmas and phones and people looking at your Windows phone. But the reason it works is because the backbone is servers. I mean, the backbone is being able to dynamically configure different types of processes and systems. And that's what the server allows you to do, is it allows you to use these different mobile devices in a flexible way that you couldn't dream of before.
No, yeah, it absolutely does. And I mean, I think it also introduces a number of challenges. I mean, people are really nervous when we talk about bring your own device. And this is a huge, if you're talking about the Department of Defense or whether you're talking about civilian agencies, mobility is front and center. Bring your own device is front and center. People are looking at, you know, what are the policies and the regulations I should put in place? There was a couple of recent studies that said that, you know, I forget the percentage, but it was a very large percentage of folks in the federal government were already bringing their own devices, whether it was their cell phone or a laptop or an iPad, right, to work, to do mission critical work, with really no policies in place. And I think, you know, what you're going to see with what we're doing in System Center and our ability to do mobile device management in the future with our cloud-based version of desktop management, something we call Windows Intune, you're going to see us kind of take this to the next level, which is, you know, we really need to be able to have group policy, for example, in Active Directory, be able to allow IT managers to see who's there, to be able to take a kind of a risk-based approach to what devices should I allow in the network. And the way we like to think about it is, what's the device you're using, right? Does it have FIPS 140-2 encryption, for example? Where are you using it from? Are you at a Starbucks? Are you at a home network? Are you on an agency or DoD network? What data are you accessing? Is it high, low, medium business impact? And then based on all of that, you kind of say, okay, here's your policies. And we want to be able to extend that and push that down to those devices, whether it's a Windows device or a non-Windows device.
And I think that's what Server does. It's not very fashionable. It's not something you talk about at a party, but it allows you to talk about different devices at a party, doesn't it? It's like, okay, finally, there's the backbone there. It's the diesel motor that's sitting in the truck out
the
there, and you can drive the food to the store, and people can eat. It's the diesel motor. And there are listeners who are really, really interested in the diesel motor. You know, I get listeners who are interested in the apps, and people, no, tell me about the VDI. Tell me about the best practice analyzer in a Windows Server. So there's a Windows Server out there that'll tell me this is a good way to configure this. It's a leap.
Well, and I think, you know, when we go and we talk to the folks that manage the data centers in the federal government, one of the biggest challenges from a personnel perspective is, you know, I got to have all these different specialists across the board that one knows how to handle, you know, virtual machine, this type of virtual machine hardware, this physical hardware, this storage interface. And I think what Windows, what System Center 2012 is going to, you know, help people do is kind of have that single pane of glass so that you can have specialists, but like 70% of the management will be able to handle be handled in that single pane of glass, which is going to be a huge savings when we look at the data center consolidation efforts underway. Whether you're going to move to a public cloud or a private cloud, you'll now be able to kind of look at this holistically, right, and be able to make really good decisions based on the security, you know, the, your security posture, the level of assurance you need, based on the application that you're trying to run more efficiently.
It's almost having a built-in consultant if you're trying to set up a or move a virtual device. The best practice manager will say, well, here's three things you might want to consider before you do that. So if it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're in a data center in Nebraska or wherever your federal agency is, you have a little bit of help here, which is I think it's responding to what a lot of people who pull cable and work in data centers really want.
Yeah, and I think there's still a lot of angst there. When we talk about cloud, especially when you go to IT departments, there's still the folks that like to see those little blinking lights. We like to call them server huggers. You know, you take their blinking lights away, they're really nervous, right? And you start to kind of remove or abstract some of the things they do on a daily basis, and it does get a little scary for folks. And if you look at just the cloud model in general, it really is not a function of where that particular data lives. It's really a function of going up the next level, going up that OSI model on that stack, and taking away or making it easier for you to manage things more efficiently. And it's an automation task. And if once people really kind of they can take a look at that and they can realize that, look, you know, with these innovations, with things in Windows Server 2012 and with System Center 2012, we're not gonna take away your ability to have a private cloud. We actually fundamentally believe that people are gonna need private clouds for years to come. What we're gonna do is we're gonna take the innovation that we have in our public cloud and bake that into our private cloud. So, for example, today we're working with our hardware vendor partners to be able to roll large racks of servers in, just literally roll them in pre-configured, right, into a data center with Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012, and something we call our data center services solution. You have your private cloud literally up and running in a matter of days versus what it would have typically taken an army of engineers to configure, to flip every single bit, to install every operating system, to make sure the networking gear was installed properly. So it is really a time saver.
Now, years ago in hardware, it was called plug and play. Now, 20 years later, it's a data center plug and play, huh?
It absolutely is. I mean, I was one of those people that had to configure some of this hardware, especially when I was building custom applications for the military. And, you know, I go back and look at the number of days taking a simple application. Well, it probably wasn't as simple, but a mission critical, you know, line of business application, installing it on a hardened rack of servers, and then shipping that out to the field. And really, you know, literally now I can say, here's the SKU over here. This particular application is really network intense. It's storage intense. It's a web-based application. So I need, you know, hardware load balancers in there, and it just literally comes to me already configured. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it is, and I can see why people are amazed at some of the results of all the money that Microsoft has put into research and development, and now here years later it comes up with products like Windows Server 2012. Let's take a break. When we come back, talk more about more innovations that Microsoft is providing the federal community. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer from Microsoft's Federal Sales. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft's Federal Sales. Well, we've only handled about 300 topics so far. What I want to talk about now is maybe a little social media and talk about innovation and Microsoft research. Some of my listeners are big Twitter addicts, and they follow people and they tweet all the time. If you want to follow me, my Twitter handle is at Ray Gilray. I follow a gentleman by the name of Lewis Shepard, and he's at Lewis Shepard. He's a good Twitter guy, and he works for Microsoft. Do you have a Twitter handle, Susie, or someone
sure
you follow?
I sure do, at Adam Susie.
Adam Susie, that's pretty easy to remember.
Say somebody had Susie Adams. So.
Adam Susie, that's great. Let's switch away from social media and talk about Microsoft research. I mentioned this earlier, and I just want to, you know, I want to get up in the chair and shout about it this time. You know, recent reports show that Microsoft spent $9.6 billion on research, more than Apple and Google combined. Now, if that was on a Jeopardy show, no one would guess that, would it? I would fail that question, but it's true.
No, it's absolutely true. And in fact, you know, I think part of the reason most people don't think about that or think that we spend that much on research is because they typically think about us as the desktop software company. I mean, how
stodgy
many innovations
can
you
do
software in desktop software? And, you know, I think one of the probably the most prominent or visible examples of our research and our success in research is really been the Xbox Kinect device. And if you, I can remember, gosh, years ago, seeing Bill Gates go on stage at an internal event and demonstrate this thing. And it was huge and it looked kind of cumbersome. And you're like, this thing is never going to work. And now, you know, I can literally go into any store and purchase it for $149. It plugs into an Xbox, it plugs into a PC. All right. And if you start to look at, you know, really what it can do, right, under the hood, we've opened up the API programming language, you know, programming interface. So now developers can actually use the device to build some really creative apps, whether they're for special needs children. We have done a lot of work in education, in the healthcare field for disabled individuals, and also in Department of Defense. Basically, anywhere where you need to interact with a device using more of a human natural user interface with sound, with gestures, and just visual. And it can even look at your expressions on your face and determine, you know, are you happy or sad today, which is just amazing.
But, you know, Susie, you know, and I know, if I went down to 17th and K and just grabbed five people and said, what about Kinect? They'd say, oh, it's probably from a little startup in California, Silicon Valley, and two guys sitting on. Well, no, it's from Microsoft, and because their research and development is so much bigger than I even realized.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, we spend about $9 billion a year, like you said earlier. We have thousands of people that work in our research departments here in the United States and on a worldwide basis. Probably about 50% of the folks are here in the United States in a variety of different places. We have some up in Boston. We have some on our Redmond campus and a few other places, and then, you know, literally globally around the world. And, you know, I think you're right. I mean, if we look at something we just started working on at CES, just this past couple of weeks, we announced something and actually demonstrated something called the Illuma Room. And how we did this was through Xbox. And so basically somebody was playing an Xbox game, and through the Kinect device, it was literally taking that user experience, that visual user experience, and projecting that on the walls.
Wow. And so it's like 360-degree
projection,
huh? It's like Star Trek and the holodeck or something, huh?
Very much like a holodeck. I mean, I was a huge, you know, go back. And if you look at the pace of innovation, just some of the things we've done with research, it's really maybe not that evident. But think about Star Trek, and just think about, you know, I was a big, when I was in fifth grade a long time ago, you know, so probably younger than that, more like 5 and 6, I was a huge Star Trek fan. I can envision the days that I had holodeck for vacation, or better yet, even the communicator, right? Now I wish I never had a communicator.
I think that's the case in point, is that if you think Microsoft is some stodgy old company, and I think people under 30 may think that, all of a sudden, mobile technology is changing things and Kinect is changing things, where they're having to rethink and go, no, wait a minute, if gamers are interested in Microsoft products, I mean, gamers are pretty cool. I mean, they're kind of up to current technology, and maybe that's been the result of all these billions of dollars spent in R&D.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of it, we do spend a lot of time on new innovations and the products that we see and become mainstream. We also spend a lot of time just on certain aspects of that technology. In fact, we have a kind of a research fair once a year where you can go around, and we do have customers come in and look at this every now and then, where you can meet with the researchers. And so, for example, a great example might be something where we have a group in the research department that's working on, how can I have something that I wear on my wrist that will know what my hands are doing? So maybe someday in the future, you'll never have a keyboard.
Wow. Right?
If you look at just the natural user interface advancements, right, from a touch perspective and a gesture perspective.
So you can have a small tablet and just have a keyboard projecting from your hands and use that.
Absolutely. What if you could have that Kinect device, that sensor, right, just located in your tablet, right, or the device you're carrying around, right, from a form factor perspective, so that you could interact with it in a much more natural space. You know, I talked earlier about my nieces and nephews just knowing how to do, you know, how to interact with something you touch. Well, they now, I mean, voice, you know, voice is nothing. You know, you go and you watch them play video games, you know, and these same two nieces and nephews about 2 years ago when Kinect first came out, they got it for Christmas, of course, from their Aunt Sue, and I gave it to them. And my sister called me up the morning after Christmas. She goes, you're never going to guess what I found. I found, you know, this third grader and this fourth grader located, you know, 500 miles apart, literally talking to each other on video, using everything. It was all
incredible voice
recognition. They knew how to do it, how to say, Xbox,
yeah,
do this.
Wow.
And they just knew how to do it. And so if you look at the way, you know, I grew up, my first intro to a computer, even seeing a computer, was a junior in high school. And my first programming application that I wrote was literally an app to manage my basketball stats. And I look at what these kids are doing, before they're not even in grade school, in some instances.
Let's talk about nerds and nerdology. Every one of my guests has to do this 10-question test. Susie, we're going to ask you and find out if you, in fact, are a card-carrying nerd. First question, the year you bought your first computer.
Oh, wow. So that would be, year I bought my first computer would be 1983.
Well, that's pretty respectable. Year your first cell phone?
Probably 92.
92, okay. That was kind of biggish back then. And do you have your own Twitter feed? I think, yeah.
I do.
Okay, and you have your own blog, but you contribute to blogs.
I contribute to blogs. Okay.
And here's a question. Do you have any online personal backup services that you use?
I do, SkyDrive.
SkyDrive, okay. And I shouldn't ask you what kind of smartphone you have, but I ask everyone what kind of smartphone you have.
I have a Windows smartphone.
And it's a pretty cool looking one, by the way, isn't it? It's a blue one with all those little tiles on
there. Yeah, Windows Phone 8 is awesome. Yeah.
I'm sure when you're Starbucks, people try to stop you and go, hey, what kind of phone is that?
They do actually now, which is really great.
And how many apps do you have on your phone?
Oh, I don't know, 30.
30, okay. And another question, what kind of tablet device do you have?
I actually have a Surface device, mm-hmm. and I also have an iPad.
Good. And what social networking sites do you participate in?
Facebook, LinkedIn, mostly.
Standard ones. And the last book read was electronic or paper?
It was electronic.
Electronic, well.
Yes.
Get some pretty good points, or I'll have to run this through my UNIVAC computer in my basement and come up with your nerdology rating and compare it to others. So many different people. I've always asked about online personal backup, and the security people usually just flip out, and they don't want to mention anything like that and act like it doesn't exist, but I think it's important to know. You've been around the federal world for many years. You've seen all kinds of trends and changes. We've seen Microsoft being gone from a stodgy company to kind of a trendy company and kind of a popular company. Where do you think this whole idea of the cloud and the federal IT and Microsoft's going to head in the next 5 to 6 years?
That is a really good question. And so, I've been supporting the federal government now for, almost over 25 years. And the trend that I'm seeing that I'm really excited about is just the change in the adoption of the pace of innovation, matching the pace of innovation or trying to. And so, before, for example, five years ago, you asked me, would cabinet-level agencies embrace a government community cloud and move their email collaboration. I'd tell you, I'm not, they're all going to go to private clouds. They're going to want to host them in their own data centers, right? And we look at, folks like the Veterans Administration and EPA and FAA, right? And GSA and others that ever are all moving to the cloud. And I think there's a number of different reasons for that. I mean, obviously, I think, the cloud innovations we're at a point right now in the technology that people are starting to feel more comfortable about it. The fact that cloud providers like Microsoft and Google and Amazon, right, and Salesforce have all now met those mandatory security requirements. Programs like FedRAMP are all really good things that are helping. And also, obviously, the budget pressures, right? We can do this much more efficiently as we start to move to the cloud. I think the other thing that I'm really excited about is the ability to help our customers take advantage of this innovation using both private clouds and public clouds, but also from a mobility perspective, to look at new ways of doing unified communications and the ability to do one-to-many meetings with things like Skype, for example. Before, you think about communicating on a bidirectional basis with citizens, that was really difficult before. It equated to U.S. mail, right, and hundreds of email messages coming in. Or you had to go and write or call your congressman. And now you can literally have these conversations live.
Respond to budget constraints, yeah. So it reduces the cost for interacting with citizens. And that's the objective of what I read from the Obama administration. They want more of that interaction.
Yeah, and when we talk about Skype, just look at the folks that are using these today. Kids today in college and in high school, most of them don't even use email. They're using Skype to talk to one another, Facebook, a text message. My niece won't even read an email if I send it to her.
Yeah, I have kids who think email is like a feather pen or something Ben Franklin would use. We'll talk more about ink pens and old-fashioned email maybe in the next interview here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft Federal Sales. Thank you, Susie.
Thank you, John. It's been a lot of fun.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.